Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK World Radio Japan, Radio Havana Cuba, and Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We'll begin with NHK World Radio Japan. Experts from the World Health Organization say that herd immunity to the coronavirus will not happen this year despite the growing availability of vaccines. Japan has extended its COVID state of emergency. Scientists from the World Health Organization have arrived in Wuhan, China, to research the origins of COVID. China just recorded its first COVID death since May. U.S. Secretary of State Pompeo says that Iran is the new home base for al-Qaeda, though he did not present any hard evidence to support his claim. The Trump administration has placed Cuba back on a list of state sponsors of terrorism, reinstating sanctions which Obama had removed in 2015. NHK Japan.
We begin with a global look at the coronavirus. Experts from the World Health Organization say that herd immunity won't happen this year, despite the growing availability of vaccines.
Even as vaccines start protecting the most vulnerable, we're not going to achieve any levels of population immunity or herd immunity in 2021. And even if it happens in a couple of pockets in a few countries, it's not going to protect people across the world.
The chief scientist said it takes time to scale the production of doses for people around the world and emphasized the importance of continuing public health and social measures. Her comments came after the WHO said last week that herd immunity requires more than 70% of its population to be vaccinated. The UN Health Agency said that as of Friday, 42 countries around the world, mainly industrialized ones, have begun or are preparing to vaccinate people.
Here in Japan, the government is expanding a state of emergency it recently declared for parts of the greater Tokyo region, as the country battles its most serious wave of infections yet. The Prime Minister spoke to the media hours ago to explain the decision. He also called for greater public cooperation to contain the spread. 7 prefectures are being added nationwide. They're Osaka, Hyogo, Kyoto, Aichi, Gifu, Fukuoka, and Tochigi. The declaration originally took effect last Friday for Tokyo and 3 neighboring prefectures. It'll remain in place until February 7th. Health authorities reported more than 5,800 new cases across Japan on Wednesday and a record 97 deaths. 900 people are in serious condition, another record high. The country has now logged more than 300,000 infections since the pandemic began.
We begin with an international investigation into the origins of the coronavirus. Scientists from the World Health Organization have arrived in the Chinese city of Wuhan, where the virus was first detected. They hope to find out where it came from and how it started to spread. A team of 13 scientists are beginning their time in Wuhan with 2 weeks in quarantine. They then plan to investigate what happened at the start of the pandemic. Details of their schedule have not been made public. The team's leader told NHK last month that it's logical to think the virus originated in China. He said this week that the team will investigate the initial cases in detail and try to find out if there also were early cases in other areas. Still, he suggested they won't get all the answers during this visit.
I don't think we will have clear answers after this initial mission. but we will be on the way, and hopefully in the coming months that will be completed by additional missions, additional studies, and leading us slowly to a better understanding of the origin of the virus.
Chinese government experts initially said the virus came from bats in China, but lately they said they couldn't rule out the possibility it was brought in from abroad because it had been detected in some imported foods. It remains to be seen whether the team will get enough cooperation from the Chinese government. It's also not clear whether they will be allowed to investigate a Wuhan laboratory from which U.S. President Donald Trump claimed the virus has escaped. China is seeing a resurgence in coronavirus cases. It has reported its first COVID-19 death since May. The National Health Commission says more than 200 new cases were confirmed on Wednesday.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has said that Iran is a new home base for al-Qaeda, although he didn't provide any hard evidence for the claim.
You now have the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism, the Islamic Republic of Iran, as the home base for al-Qaeda.
Pompeo claimed Iran has given al-Qaeda leaders safe havens and logistical support since 2015. That was when the country signed a nuclear accord with world powers. He also revealed that al-Qaeda's number two had died in Iran last August. The person is said to have been one of the masterminds of bombing attacks on U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania in 1998. Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif lashed out at Pompeo in a tweet, calling the accusations, in his words, war-mongering lies. The Trump administration is using its final days to ramp up pressure on Iran. It announced fresh sanctions last week on the pretext of depriving Tehran of revenues to support foreign terrorist groups. Now, the administration of President Trump says it has put Cuba back on the list of state sponsors of terrorism, reversing the earlier removal under President Barack Obama. The designation means exports and sales of weapons-related products from the U.S. to Cuba are banned. Economic assistance, excluding humanitarian efforts, is also restricted. The U.S. government put Cuba on the list of state sponsors of terrorism in 1982, but the Obama administration removed it in 2015 during negotiations to normalize ties between the two nations. Trump has taken a hardline stance on Cuba, reversing policies introduced under Obama. He has also tightened economic sanctions on Cuba, including restrictions on remittances from the U.S. President-elect Joe Biden suggested in his election campaign a willingness to improve bilateral ties by removing Trump's sanctions on Cuba. This latest move could impact U.S.-Cuba relations for Biden's incoming government.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. They are now heard from 8:30 to 9 p.m. at 6155-7245 and 7445, or on the web at www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba responded to the outgoing Trump action of returning them to a list of state sponsors of terrorism, pointing out that they have been a victim of U.S. terrorism many times since the revolution. The vice president of Venezuela denounced the current joint military exercise between Guyana and the U.S., saying that they will be carried out in Venezuelan territory and it is to open the area for U.S. oil company exploitation. The head of the World Health Organization says there is a clear problem that low- and middle-income countries are not receiving COVID vaccines. Then a viewpoint on major pharmaceutical firms making huge profits from COVID vaccines when the majority of the research funding came from governments, that is, the taxpayers of those countries. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Cuba opposes terrorism. It has been a victim of this scourge and never a sponsor, President Miguel Díaz-Canel stressed on Tuesday. According to the president, the island's inclusion by the United States in the list of state sponsors of terrorism are the last whisk of a failed and corrupt administration committed to the Cuban mafia in Miami. The discredited Trump administration is doing everything possible to hinder and prevent an improvement in relations during Biden's presidency, he denounced on Twitter. Díaz-Canel added that the United States' blockade against Cuba is an example of state terrorism. And at the height of cynicism, the terrorists and immoral people of the Trump administration accused the country of sponsoring that scourge. The head of state also wrote that the world condemns the hypocritical and cynical qualification in reference to the examples of international denunciation after the inclusion of the Caribbean nation in that list. On Monday, the United States Secretary of State Mike Pompeo announced in a statement the department's decision of designating the island in the list of states that sponsor terrorism. Cuba had been excluded from that group in 2015 during the thaw with the United States during Barack Obama's second term from 2009 to 2017. According to Pompeo's statement, Cuba was included for allegedly providing repeated support to acts of international terrorism by granting safe haven to terrorists, accusations that the island has repeatedly denied. Cuban Foreign Minister promptly condemned the administration's final hour measure to entangle a possible future normalization of relations between Washington and Havana. The political opportunism of this action is recognized by all who have an honest concern for the scourge of terrorism and its victims, Bruno Parrilla wrote on Twitter. Numerous voices took to the social media network to condemn the decision described as a malicious and politically motivated act. Reacting to the news, the Democratic senator from Vermont, Patrick Lehigh, described the measure as a blatantly politicized designation and that domestic terrorism in the United States poses a far greater threat to Americans than Cuba does, he said. For her part, Cuba solidarity activist Gloria Larriba wrote on Twitter, "The world knows that Cuba is not a state sponsor of terrorism. It's the other way around. Cuba suffered 3,478 Cuban citizens murdered and 2,099 people injured, almost all due to United States-supported, trained, financed, armed terrorists. The United States sends bombs. Cuba sends doctors." Political figures in Latin America repudiate Cuba's inclusion as a sponsor of terrorism in a controversial list drawn up by the United States government. Former Bolivian President Evo Morales stated that the United States does not have any moral authority to put Cuba on the list. Cuba is the most supportive country in the world. Amid a pandemic, it continues to send doctors who save lives. Meanwhile, the United States invades countries and organizes coup d'etat, the former Bolivian president said on Twitter.
The Vice President of Venezuela, Delcy Rodriguez, appeared before the national and international media on Monday to denounce the most recent behavior of Guyana and the United States with respect to the disputed region of Essequibo. Accompanied by Defense Minister General Vladimir Padrino López and Foreign Minister Jorge Arriaza, Delcy Rodriguez reported that her country views with concern the joint military exercises that Guyana and the United States are conducting. Quote, "President Nicolas Maduro has asked us to speak very clearly to the nation and alert countries in our region about joint military exercises started this Monday between the United States and the Federal Republic of Guyana," the vice president said. "There is a presence of a U.S. Coast Guard vessel. We are very concerned that these military exercises will be carried out in Venezuelan jurisdictional waters," said the vice president. Rodriguez warned that this is one more maneuver to shore up Guyana's illegal sovereignty over the Essequibo territory, which the U.S. government has been doing with particular emphasis in recent times. Part of these actions are also the opening up to oil exploitation by U.S. companies like Exxon.
Director General Tedros Adhanom, the head of the World Health Organization, the WHO, has said that there is a clear problem that low- and middle-income countries are not yet receiving supplies of COVID-19 vaccines and urged countries to stop striking bilateral deals with manufacturers. In a strongly worded comment on vaccine nationalism at a Geneva news briefing, Adhanom said, quote, "Rich countries have the majority of the supply. No country is exceptional and should not jump the queue and vaccinate all their population while some remain with no supplies of the vaccine." he asked countries and manufacturers to stop making bilateral deals and called on those who have ordered excess doses to immediately hand them over to the COVAX vaccine sharing facility. While Adhanom did not name countries, the European Union said it reached a deal with Pfizer and BioNTech for 300 million additional doses of their COVID-19 vaccine in a move that would give the European Union nearly one half of the firm's global output for 2021.
2020 was a very difficult year with serious losses for almost everyone when it comes to health, social, political and economic terms, except, of course, for the industrial and commercial pharmaceutical consortiums that made huge profits from the COVID-19 pandemic. An article published this Sunday in the Mexican newspaper La Jornada disclosed that the main firms in that sector increased their value, that is, their capital, by the extraordinary figure of $90 billion in the stock markets. This information was released by the scientific data analysis company Airfinity, which links these profits to the possibilities of manufacturing a safe vaccine against the new coronavirus. What's interesting, or rather disturbing, is the fact that the investment made by the governments with public money, that is, with the taxes paid by the population, played a key role in this business. Indeed, the data shows that several countries contributed no less than $8.6 billion to the research and another $1.9 billion were given by private organizations. On the other hand, the pharmaceutical companies put on the table only $4.4 billion, less than half of the investment, and still will keep 100% of their revenues. Moreover, the non-governmental organization Doctors Without Borders denounced that the private pharmaceutical companies had all the time free access to the information and research on the pandemic carried out in public laboratories and universities. However, they're not obliged to share their profits. La Jornada newspaper has described it as a typical case of private enrichment thanks to public funds, but which doesn't come out of nowhere. For decades, the neoliberal doctrine has induced governments to reduce spending on public health, not only on hospitals and other care centers, but also on the development of scientific knowledge and practice, leaving them in the hands of the private sector.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. I am grateful for donations from listeners in Willits, Redwood Valley, and Neyland, California, along with a longtime supporter from the UK. Many, many thanks. We will conclude with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Human Rights Watch issued a report stating that Trump has been a disaster for human rights, both global and domestic. The good news is that the rest of the world did not follow his lead. The Supreme Court in India has suspended the new agricultural laws, which have led to widespread protest by farmers who want to be able to sell their products directly without corporate or government control. Then a brief report from Ireland, Italy, COVID and vaccines, Nepal, and a global pledge at the One Planet Conference to reforest parts of the expanding Sahara Desert. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Human Rights Watch has handed U.S. President Donald Trump a scathing report card in their annual roundup of the rights of people worldwide. Human Rights Watch Executive Director Kenneth Roth told DW that Donald Trump had been a disaster for human rights.
Well, Trump completely abandoned the cause of human rights. At home, he promoted divisiveness, racism, attacked immigrants. Abroad, he cozied up to basically every friendly autocrat under the sun. He did occasionally speak out about human rights, but it was always with respect to perceived adversaries like Venezuela, Cuba, Iran, in the end, China. But those, you know, protestations had no credibility because they were so completely unprincipled. So, you know, that's the bad news. The good news is that the rest of the world didn't abandon human rights just because Trump did. They saw how important they were. And we saw many governments stepping forward and assuming leadership roles for the first time. This happened through various Latin American democracies. They banded together something called the Lima Group to address human rights violations in Venezuela. We saw the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which rarely addressed human rights, coming forward and defending the Rohingya Muslims from persecution in Myanmar. In various European governments, foremost Germany played a very important role. Germany helped to rally governments to condemn China's repression in Xinjiang. It helped press Putin to stop the bombing of civilians in Idlib province in Syria. So there is this broader, more global defense of human rights that we urge Biden to join and not supplant, to come in as a partner, not pretend that the U.S. is suddenly going to be a leader.
Now to India, where the Supreme Court has suspended the implementation of controversial new agriculture laws, which have led to widespread protests from farmers. The Chief Justice announced the court would form a committee to hear farmers' concerns. Tens of thousands have been camped on the outskirts of Delhi for more than a month. They say the changes benefit large private buyers at the expense of smaller producers. Nearly 60% of the country's population depends on agriculture for their livelihoods. Straight to Delhi then, where we join our bureau chief there, Amrita Cheema. Welcome, Amrita. What more can you tell us about the court's decision?
Phil, some very strong words from the Supreme Court today. They were listening to some petitions which were challenging the validity of these three agricultural laws which were passed in September. The Chief Justice said that it felt he was very disappointed by the way the government was handling these protests. He described the government's way of dealing with the farmers as ineffective. And he went on to say that the Supreme Court suggested a panel be set up, and he wants to create an atmosphere, he said, through this panel, which was comfortable and conducive for the two sides to come together and find a solution, because we must remember that 8 rounds of negotiations between the farmers' organizations and the government had yielded no outcome so far.
And you mentioned the Supreme Court Chief Justice there. He does seem oddly partial. I've seen a quote here saying that we will protect farmers.
Well, I think from the farmers' perspective, they welcome the decision by the Supreme Court to put a stay on the implementation of these controversial laws. But there's a fundamental lack of trust that the farmers feel towards the government's proposals. So they feel that although the Supreme Court is sounding very optimistic and positive about finding an outcome, they are worried that the panel which the Supreme Court is suggesting is very pro these controversial farmers' laws. So they don't believe that this panel will bring any outcome, and they're categorically rejected taking part in any panel discussions with the committee that the Supreme Court is proposing to set up.
And perhaps you could quickly outline for us what it is about these changes that has so upset the farmers.
Phil, the manner in which these changes were passed, they were passed at a time during the pandemic when the opposition was boycotting parliament, so the farmers were not consulted. So that's the first big thing. They feel that they were simply not consulted. And secondly, they feel that they will be thrown at the mercy of large corporates, especially when it comes to selling their crops. And they were dependent on an assured minimum price that they would get from the government. And these laws aim to loosen that. And they feel they'll be left in the lurch, and they'll be left at the mercy of large corporate farmers.
So this sounds like a victory along a long road. I guess the farmers must be very happy about this.
Phil, they're not happy. I think they are really worried about these developments. It's been a boost for their protests. But what they really want is not a stay on these laws. What they want is not another panel discussion. They want these laws repealed. And they want their discussions to be directly with the government, because it's the government which has passed these laws. And they want to have direct discussions with Prime Minister Modi's government. They've said their protest is going to continue. They've also pledged to have a large tractor rally on the 26th of January, which is India's Republic Day. And they show no sign of that their resolve is breaking or that they'll end their protest anytime soon.
Good talking to you. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rita Cheema in Delhi.
Ireland's Prime Minister has apologized to former residents of homes run by the Catholic Church for unmarried mothers and their babies. An inquiry found that 9,000 children died in the homes that operated for decades until the 1990s. Martin said the Ireland must acknowledge this scandal. Hundreds of suspected gangsters have gone on trial in Italy's biggest ever case against the mafia. Defendants include politicians, lawyers, and businessmen allegedly involved in organized crime. They're accused of murder, drug trafficking, extortion, and money laundering. The trial will last at least a year.
Malaysia's king has declared a coronavirus state of emergency. It will suspend parliament at least until August amid political turmoil. It comes as much of the country is set to begin a two-week partial lockdown. And authorities in China have introduced a new COVID-19 restriction in areas surrounding Beijing. 5 million residents of Rabai province are under lockdown as fears grow of a second wave.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson says he wants to start a round-the-clock vaccination program as soon as possible. He said 24/7 vaccinations could begin as soon as there was adequate supply.
Mexican health authorities aim to fast-track Russia's Sputnik V coronavirus vaccine after getting access to data on it.
Turkey has started vaccinating healthcare workers using the Chinese-developed Sinovac shot. The country's health ministry says more than 200,000 people have already received the vaccine. In Australia, Queensland's state premier is considering using remote mining camps to quarantine international arrivals. And Pope Francis has received the coronavirus vaccine. The 84-year-old pontiff had part of a lung removed due to an illness in his 20s, so he would be a high-risk patient if he were to contract the virus.
Well, Germany's health minister Jens Spahn says the country will not be able to lift all the restrictions in place to curb the spread of the coronavirus at the beginning of February. The news comes as the death toll from the COVID-19 virus continues to mount and new infections rise. In 24 hours, more than 1,000 people have died of COVID-19 and nearly 20,000 more people have tested positive. Chancellor Angela Merkel has reportedly said she expects the situation to remain tough and for at least another 8 to 10 weeks.
Police in Nepal have clashed with thousands of protesters demanding the reinstatement of the monarchy. The country has seen numerous protests since the Prime Minister failed to honour a pledge to split his term with his co-leader. Nepal's monarchy was abolished more than a decade ago and the country turned into a democratic republic.
And world leaders have pledged over $14 billion to help tackle the climate crisis. They were attending the One Planet Summit, which oversees the implementation of the Paris Climate Agreement. French President Emmanuel Macron said the money will go to the Great Green Wall Project, which aims to plant thousands of kilometers of trees to stop the spread of the Sahara Desert.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Please try listening to international broadcasters once a week and compare that to the media from your own country. It is really easy on the internet. I will continue to listen to 20-plus hours a week and share excerpts with you, but my goal is to guide you to listen globally. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website, along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.